I know many of you are grateful because I'm not afraid to speak the truth regardless of backlash. You've told me that. You've shaken my hands right there. Thank you for doing that. I'm not afraid to take what some consider bold stands against wokeness or the alphabet insanity or a lot of other hard stuff that so many pastors avoid. Well, today that's going to be tested. The stewardship series is taking us into the subject of money. I know from marriage to parenting and now money. I'm trying to get people to leave the church, right? No, I'm not. Many Christians do not like it when our pastors talk about money, and for good reason. Some so-called pastors talk about money so often and use so much manipulation that we do not want to hear about money. As a result, when you think about that, I mean, I know people who left their church after the giving series. I know people who left their church right before the giving series, right? I know some stay home when the subject is money. We act like the preacher can talk about anything but money. And many pastors are happy to oblige. Instead, we just trust God to give us the money we need, to give us the ministries that he wants us to have. And I say we because that's me. If I'm honest, I'm not afraid to talk about Marxist infiltration and all these crazy things that are going on in the world that could get a bunch of backlash. But when it comes to money, that's been very different for me. I've only talked about money 2 times in 9 years as the pastor here. Once in 2015 and once in 2018, and that's it. 5+ years of not talking about money. But here's the problem. I know money is an idol for many. So if I don't talk about it, that idol isn't attacked, at least not by me. I know some Christians deal with financial fear, stress, and anxiety. So if I don't talk about money, I don't help them with any of that. I also know the number one reason spouses give for why they got divorced is money. So by not talking about money, I haven't served. I haven't cared for the marriages here at Redeemer. I know people are workaholics for money, but if that's not addressed, if I don't talk about it, then you stay the same. I know Christians can be stingy or frantic or angry or untrustworthy all because of money, and I don't care for them when I don't talk about money. 1 Timothy 6:10 says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So by not talking about money, I haven't talked about the source of all kinds of evil in our lives. According to one author, Randy Alcorn, 15% of everything Jesus said was about money. So I'm not preaching Christ if I'm not talking about money. So in all honesty, I have to apologize to you for being afraid to talk about money. Jesus talked more about money than he talked about heaven and hell combined. And you know why he did that? Because money can actually keep you out of heaven. Matthew 6:24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. And he summarizes that by saying, you are not able to serve God and money. In the end, I have to talk about money because few things reveal our hearts more than our money does. You see, either God has your heart or money has your heart. So this message on the stewardship of money is really a message on the stewardship of our hearts. And money is just the x-ray. It's the EKG. It's the MRI that clearly reveals what's really going on deep inside of each of our hearts. This might be considered hard truths today. But it's not hard because the truths are hard. It's hard because our hearts can be hard to God's truths when it comes to money. So my hope is that this message is going to help our hearts, that it'll fight some of the sins that the love of money is the root of, that it'll help marriages stay together and help us get ready for when we stand before Jesus and give an account for how we used our money. Now, like the last 2 weeks, today's message is more of the what to think and what to do when it comes to money. And the recommended books from the pastors on the back of the handout in your program, those have a lot of the how to do it. So how do I put this into practice? You'll find that there. You see, at the end of the day, like your life and your family, you've been entrusted with your money. As we've seen in the series, God has entrusted everything we have to us to steward it how he wants, to stewardship in ways that please him. And one day, he will hold us accountable for how we managed or how we mismanaged his stuff. This, again, is true of our lives and our spouses and our children. And it's true of our money. Now, I say our money, but in reality, not a cent of it is our money, right? All of it came from God, and it all belongs to God, which makes all of us God's money managers. Listen, no pastor has the right to talk to you about your money, but our money isn't our money. Our money is God's money. And if I love you, I will talk with you about it. And if I love you, I will talk to you about it from God's word. And I want you to notice on the handout, there are almost four dozen verses in this message today, because what I want you to hear is not from me. What I want you to hear is from God, because it's his money that we have. Proverbs 10:22 puts it this way, the blessing of the Lord makes rich. Paul asks, 1 Corinthians 4:7, what do you have that you did not receive? In other words, God is the source of our money. So if I'm going to summarize this message in one sentence, it's this. We need to be God-pleasing money managers. God already sees our bank account. So the question is, do we please him with our management of his money? And for guidance on this, we're going to turn to the book of Proverbs. Now, Proverbs is misunderstood because Proverbs is not a book of promises. It's a book of principles that if you do them, you will be wise, which means that what it means to be wise in the Bible is to have the smile of God on your decisions, that you make decisions, you're in certain situations, and the way that you act and react and interact, God looks at that and goes, that's right, that's good, good job, keep it up. So I talked with my kids about this proverb this week, Proverbs 10:9. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely. Now, in general, that's true, but it's not a universal law. How do you know that? Well, I mean, no one walked with more integrity than who? Than Jesus. That's the answer to all the questions, right? Than Jesus. And yet at the same time, he suffered great harm and ridicule and betrayal and torture and murder, all because of his integrity. So Proverbs are not laws and they're not guaranteed promises. They are principles that when applied at the right time and in the right circumstance are generally true. So God's word is gushing with wisdom from heaven about how to handle money. And most people live and learn, which means they learn wisdom, but they learn it through pain. And God says, listen, I have a much better way for you. Learn the Proverbs and then live. Learn the Proverbs and then live, and then avoid all the pain that comes in life, all of this pain that I want you to avoid because I gave you these Proverbs. In other words, the question for us today will be, are we going to ignore these things and continue with anxiety and anger and stress and fear about money? Or will we follow the Lord into the freedom and the peace and the joy that he has planned by giving us these words about money? Of the over 900 Proverbs in the book of Proverbs, over 100 of them are about money. And the first one in the book of Proverbs is the one we just read together, Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. First thing I want you to see is that God doesn't honor our money, right? He doesn't play favorites. He's not impressed. He doesn't play favorites with people who have money versus people who don't have money. No, instead, notice where we are to honor God with our money. How do we do that? We make him look good with our money. We make his will, his ways, what he wants look good with the money that he has entrusted to us. It shows that when we do that, it shows that money isn't our God, but God is our God. When we make him, his will, his mission, our priorities with the money that he has given us. And not just our money in general, but look at verse 9. It says the first fruits of all your produce. That is what you produce with the work that you do. So second, the idea from the last half of verse 9 is that God should not get our leftovers. We should honor him with what we spend first. The idea here in an agrarian society like ancient Israel was not, well, if my sheep has five lambs, I'll give him one. That's not what this is saying. The idea is this, it's scarier. Give God the first one regardless as an act of trust that he'll take care of you. See, returning the first part to the God who gave it does two things. It shows that he's first in our lives. Like, I'm going to trust you, that the best part is going to you. And it shows that we're trusting him to supply whatever else that we need. And you see this in verse 10. You do verse 9, then verse 10, your barns will be filled with plenty. your vats will be bursting with wine. Now, again, this is not a promise that you'll be rich if you honor God with your money. Again, Proverbs are principles. And this is the principle. Namely, if you prioritize God with your money and you don't give him your leftovers, third, you can trust him to take care of you. He will take care of you. So to get us started at being God-pleasing money managers, it starts with this. Point number one, love the giver, not his gift. Love the giver, not his gift of money. At the most basic level, we should love God, not money. I know that's like profound and deep, right? But no, love God, not money. In other words, God should have our hearts, our priorities. And when he does, it's seen in using our money for him. Using our money for what he wants. Using our money to advance his will, his mission in the world through the management of his money. But money has a power over us that makes it compete for our allegiance, doesn't it? Like it tries hard to get us to trade God's priorities for what? For ours. That's why Jesus said, you cannot serve God and money. He's saying either your money will serve God or money will be your God. It's that blatant. And in fact, there are examples in the Bibles of this. Men named Balaam and Achan and Gehazi are biblical examples of people who made money their God and who were led astray by the love of money, but there was no one who was worse than who on this? Judas, right? He loved money so much, what did he do? He traded Jesus in order to have money. But people do that all the time. Jesus illustrated this in the parable of the seeds and the soils when he said, Matthew 13:22, as for the seed that was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and it proves unfruitful. In other words, people turn from their commitment to Jesus, and what turns them is money. Jesus encounters this when he met a man that is known as who's known as the rich young ruler, Luke 18, where it says that instead of ridding himself of everything that would keep him from Jesus and receiving eternal life, the man walked away, quote, very sad, for he was extremely rich. So for some people, this is the issue, God and money, and it's the love of money and all that money can do for them that is the major obstacle keeping them from faith in Jesus. So if we all looked at our bank accounts right now, what withdrawals would there be to prove that we love God and not his gift of money? Well, Proverbs helps us on this too. First, if you look at verse 9 again, what we would see is a prioritizing of God's work and how we spend our money. And listen, the primary way you and I prioritize the mission, God's mission, is by giving to a local church that is actually doing God's mission, right? Galatians 6:6 puts it this way, let the one who has taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. Translation, Christians are to give where we are fed the Bible. So if it teaches us the Bible, our sharing, our giving should primarily be to our local church. It is a privilege not just to have a local church, but to support the work of a solid local church. There just aren't many of them out there. You know, so when you have one, you found one and you have one, if your church is solid and biblical, then it's obedience to Galatians 6:6 to give to that work. Second, loving God and not money means using his money to be a good steward in the areas God has entrusted to you. So you show you love God when you take care of things like your family and the other things entrusted to you, like your body or your car or your house, whatever, like these things that you've been entrusted with that you need to be a good steward of. So if someone's wasting their money and as a result can't take care of their family, that actually shows a love for self and not a love for God or love for what he's entrusted to us. Third, loving God with our money will be seen in our bank account with investments in the knowledge of God. What do I mean by that? Well, listen to Proverbs 8:19. Wisdom is speaking, and it says this, my fruit, the result of me in your life, is better than gold. So what it's saying is like if you have gold here or wisdom here, you and I should trade the gold to have wisdom. My fruit is better than gold and even fine gold, and my yield is better than choice silver. So when we trade our money for things that help us grow in our knowledge of God, help us grow in living our life for the glory of God and the honor of God, to please God, that shows that we love God and not just the gift of money that he's given us. And fourth, you know you love God when you get your money in ways that are honest and honorable. Proverbs 1:13 talks about not joining people who make money through harming other people. And Proverbs, you read the book of Proverbs throughout, you'll see money proverbs that say things like lies and wickedness, things like violence, fraud, and oppression can actually make people very rich. But it doesn't prove that they love God, just the opposite. It actually harms people, not love, that doesn't love them either. So at the very basic level, we show we love God and not his gift of money when we see what pleases him in the withdrawals of our bank account. This actually isn't rocket science, though, if you think about it, right? I mean, loving the giver, not the gift. Like loving your mom more than the Christmas gift that she gave you. Like, duh, right? Of course, that's normal. That's right, right? And a child who's all about the gift and not their mom, we'd say is like spoiled or ungrateful, or they're just using mom for the gift. Money can get us twisted on this, though. Money plus leftover sin in our hearts can really get us twisted on this, because it's easy for us to justify selfishness and rationalize sin. So we just strip everything down to the bare foundation. It just starts with this. What has my heart? What has my heart? Is it God that I love, or is it money that I love? Do I use my money for God's purposes in the world, or do I use God for money because I'm the priority? This is why the prosperity movement drives me insane. I refuse to call it the prosperity gospel because there's not an ounce of good news in that movement. Listen, giving to God's priorities, giving off the top, giving 10%, giving 100% does not guarantee financial success. How do I know that? Because God cannot owe anybody anything, right? Job 41:11, God says this, "Who has first given to me that I should repay him?" Answer, nobody. Whatever is under the whole earth is mine. You can't give me anything that I don't already own. Romans 11:35 puts it this way, "Who has given a gift to God that he might be repaid?" Again, answer, no one. You can't give God anything he doesn't already have. He does not, he cannot ever owe anyone anything. A gift with strings attached, like God will prosper me if I give this, that's not a gift. That is a purchase. And you cannot purchase God's blessing. That's blasphemy. You ever hear one of these con men say anything like, "Well, if you give to me, God will multiply it 100 times. What do you say to that? You say this, "If that's true, give me $1 million and God will give you 100 million. Let's go." You think they're going to do that? No, because you just expose them as con men, frauds, and scams. You expose the fact that hell is their home. Why? Because they don't love God. They love money, and they're using God to get rich. And like the rich young ruler, it is money that is keeping them from following Jesus. And so for all of us, we got to look at our bank account this week and pray, God, as you scroll through it, God, does this show love for you? Or is this dominated by love for me? And Proverbs has more to say about money. We just scratched the surface. But interestingly, even though it can capture our hearts and control our lives and is the root of all kinds of evil, the Bible never says that money itself is evil. Did you know that? It's not evil. Like a knife, money is neutral. And like a knife, which can be used for surgery or for savagery, money can also be used for evil. And it can be used for good, for tremendous good in the lives of people when our money is used to honor God. Now, money's gotten a bad rap, though, because again, in response to con men disguised as pastors, what happened is the pendulum swings in some circles to a poverty mentality that says money is the root of all evil. But that's not true. That's misquoting the Bible. 1 Timothy 6:10 actually says, quote, "The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil." And that makes sense, right? Loving money, wanting it, needing it, that can drive people to sin. It can drive people to not live for Jesus and not love him. And it's that would lead people into all sorts of evil, but not money itself. However, with that said, in the hands of sinners whose hearts trick us, who can be deceived and hypnotized by what money can do for us, money can actually be dangerous. So if we're going to be God-pleasing money managers, we must, point number two, beware of money's dangers. Point number two, beware of money's dangers. Fools see sign, it's like, don't touch wire. And what do? They touch it, right? Wise people know, if I'm going to touch that wire, I better be careful. Better be cautious. Better respect that wire or it's going to hurt. And in the same way, we should be careful and cautious and respectful of money. So as we'll see, we can manage God's money God's way, or we can manage it the hard way. Like electricity, money can harm our lives if we aren't careful with it. Now, when Proverbs, in the book of Proverbs, you read this throughout, Proverbs primarily addresses two kinds of people when it comes to money, the poor and the rich. Now, the Bible doesn't say being rich is evil or good, and it doesn't say being poor is evil or good. Jesus was poor, and no one was more blessed, all right? So it's not true. So that concept is not true. Now, the poor in America aren't like the poor in Israel 3,000 years ago. In fact, if you make over $35,000 a year, you are in the top 1% of earners on the planet right now. Now, I know 35K a year is not rich here in America. I know that. So as I go through what Proverbs says to the poor and to the rich, I know most of us are going to see ourselves somewhere in between. And what that means is we need to listen to all of that advice to the poor and to the rich to help us grow in wisdom when it comes to money. And to the poor and to the rich, the first thing that Proverbs wants to ask us is this: are you saving any money? Are you saving any money? Proverbs 13:11 says, "Wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it." So I love how one pastor friend of mine put it. He said, we should all give first, save second, and live on the rest. So with 10% of our income as maybe a good starting point, it's give the first 10% to honor God, the second 10% to build wealth, and then buy what you need with the leftover 80% as we grow in contentment with what God has given us. Proverbs 6:8 encourages us to look at the ant who, quote, prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food at harvest. So in times of plenty, like summer and harvest, the ant is saving up food for winter. It's like, okay, yeah, duh, of course. Yeah, well, we can learn from that. Save in the good times so that we're okay in the hard times. So a wise person, poor or rich, saves money. Now, to the poor, Proverbs points out 7 money dangers that are specific to them. 7 diagnostic questions for us to consider. And the first one is this: is laziness why you're poor? Is laziness why you're poor? Why? Proverbs 10:4 warns, quote, "A slack hand, a life of lazy activity, a slack hand causes poverty." Second, Proverbs asks, do you just love having fun? If so, Proverbs 21:17 warns, quote, "Whoever loves pleasure will be a poor man." Third, Proverbs asks this: do you waste a lot of time on things that don't get you ahead in life? If so, Proverbs 28:19 warns, "He who follows worthless pursuits will have plenty of poverty." Fourth, Proverbs asks, are you stubborn or are you a know-it-all? Why? Because if you are, Proverbs 13:18, poverty and disgrace come to him who ignores instruction. Fifth, Proverbs asks, are you careless? If so, Proverbs 21:5 warns, everyone who is hasty, everyone who's careless, everyone who's not thinking through what they're doing only comes to poverty. Seventh, Proverbs asks, do you lack self-control? If so, Proverbs 23:21 warns, the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty. Seventh, Proverbs asks, are you greedy? Are you greedy for money? If so, Proverbs 28:20 warns, whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. See, 1 Timothy 6:9 warns all of us this. It says, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. So what's the answer? What's the counter to greed? Hebrews 13:5 tells us, it says, keep your life free from the love of money. Get that out of your heart. Get that out of your life. And the response, what's the contrast to that? The verse continues, be content with what you have. The answer to greed is contentment. Being grateful and content with what God has given us instead of demanding that we have more. So that's for the poor, diagnostic questions. But what about the rich? Proverbs has wisdom for the rich if they will listen to it. It helps keep their eyes open for 9 specific dangers that come from money. And the first one is that money can be lost if we become the things that we just saw. Things like lazy and fun-loving and a time waster, stubborn, careless, out of control, and greedy. If we become those things, all of those things can lead to poverty if we're not careful. Second, even though Proverbs 10:15 says money can give security, money can also create a false sense of security because Proverbs 11:28 says, whoever trusts in his riches will fall. Whoever trusts whose hope, I've got my money, so I'm good. It says they'll be brought down. Third, the rich have to watch out for fair weather friends. Proverbs 19:4 puts it this way, wealth brings many new friends. Money comes with friends who are friends as long as you still have money. Fourth, money leaves a lot easier than it comes. And people say, that's right. Proverbs 23:4, do not toil to acquire wealth. When your eyes light on it, the idea there is your eyes like, oh, there it is. When your eyes light on it, it is gone. For suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven. Fifth, the rich are susceptible to being prideful. Proverbs 28:11 says this, a rich man is wise in his own eyes. Six, having money can actually turn people into jerks. Listen to Proverbs 18:23. The poor use entreaties. They're kind. They're nice. But the verse continues, but the rich answer roughly. Seventh, the rich are inclined to forget God. Proverbs 30, verse 2 says, don't give me riches, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Again, money can become your God if you don't keep it in its place, which is as a servant of God. Deuteronomy 8:17 puts it this way, beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth. And eighth, the rich are susceptible to bribery and ransom. Proverbs 13:8 puts it this way, the ransom of a man's life is his wealth, but a poor man hears no threats. Why is that? Because they don't have anything. I'm going to kidnap a poor guy. I'm not going to get anything from that. The idea here is no one threatens the poor because they don't have anything, but the rich have targets on their back from shady people. Now, this point you might be thinking, so I can be rich and have a false sense of security and some fair weather friends and be susceptible to things like pride and being a jerk and forgetting God and all of that. I'll take that risk, right? Give me that. I'll be rich and I'll do all of that. But the ninth warning to the rich is incredibly grave. Proverbs 11:4, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. No matter how much money you have, it is worthless to buy your salvation. Only righteousness rescues from God's wrath, but it's not our righteousness, right? It's the righteousness of Jesus, which is his perfect record as this sinless, holy God, which he trades for all of our unrighteousness, all of our sin when we believe in him. We give our life to him, he gets all our sin, and he exchanges it for his perfect life. So he gets punished on the cross, we get his blessing, which is fellowship with God, friendship with God now and forever in eternity. That's why 1 Peter 1:19 says that what buys our salvation is not silver and gold, but, quote, the precious blood of Christ. So that's the case. Believe in him. Give your life to him. It's one thing to talk about money. It's another thing to talk about your eternal soul, which is far more important. Now, Proverbs says there are some things that are far better for us to have and pursue than money. It's crazy, but there is. It says righteousness is better than money, which we just saw. That's better. I can be poor, but if I'm going to heaven, that's okay. The fear of the Lord is better than money. Wisdom is better than money. Understanding is better than money. Integrity is better than money. Proverbs 31:10 says a godly wife is better than money. And Proverbs 22:11 says a good reputation is better than money. So if you're dirt poor, but you have all of that, You are filthy rich in what matters. And it matters because it matters to God. This is Proverbs 28:6. Better is a poor man who walks in integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. Now we'll say to that, well, I can have both, right? I can have integrity and riches. Yes, but like a soldier alert at his post, you have to be on guard and alert for the dangers that come with trying to get money and having money or having no money. There are dangers involved. And think about this too. Like, God doesn't say to us, you know what? You have to manage my money. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it. I'm not going to tell you what to look out for. It's all up to you to figure it out. But guess what? I'm going to come to you one day and I'm going to assess how you do in the management of my money. Good luck with that. No, that's not the God of the Bible. That's not our God. He is kind and he's gracious. And he says to us, here, let me help you manage my money by filling my word with advice, with counsel, with commands that tell you, here's how you do that in a way that honors me, in a way that shows that that I'm your God and not money is your God. And here's some of the dangers to be aware of, regardless of how much money I've given you to be a steward of. Now, God-pleasing money managers, as you go through the book of Proverbs, you begin to see that there's a pattern that all God-pleasing money managers are marked by this one quality. They're not stingy, miserly, or cheap. Like, God-pleasing money managers are generous. Money's value, therefore, if we put it all together, money's value is seen in how we honor God with it and how we bless others with it. When the wise are talked about with money, they're often described as being generous. Like Proverbs 21:26 says, the righteous gives and doesn't hold back. They're not stingy, they give. Or like Proverbs 11:25, whoever brings blessing will be enriched. And one who waters will himself be watered. But the people curse him who holds back grain. They curse those who are stingy, who hold back. But a blessing is on the head of him who sells. People love generous people. However, Proverbs 28:22 says, a stingy man, a man who's not generous, hastens after wealth and does not know that poverty will come upon him. Similarly, Proverbs 28:27 says this, whoever gives to the poor will not want, but he who hides his eyes will get many a curse. In other words, if we're not generous, if we hide our eyes from someone else's need, we set ourselves up for a life of dislike from others and a life of difficulty. This is clear. Proverbs 21:13 says, whoever closes his ears to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. See, no one helps the stingy, the miserly, the cheap, the Ebenezer Scrooges. Nobody helps them because when it was in their power to help, they refused. Well, since generosity is praised, the God-pleasing money manager will point number three, prioritize generosity with your money. Prioritize generosity with your money. And I don't mean by that, give God's money to everyone who says that they need it. No. Be wise, be discerning, ask questions, all of that, but also be selfless with God's money by being generous. We already saw stinginess is condemned. We also saw that generosity is praised, and it's how you know you're wise. But let me summarize the verses we just looked at when it comes to generosity. Proverbs says the generous not only do good, but they receive good from being generous. In other words, it's like a boomerang. They throw generosity out into the world, and what comes back to them is generosity from others. Proverbs says that the generous have a good reputation with those who know them. The generous are not being chased by poverty, but they are resting secure. And the generous experience God's smile on their life. They even experience answers prayer. They cry out and are answered because they're generous. So does any of that sound good to anybody? Like, don't you want that stuff in your life? I know I do. This is just Old Testament. 2 Corinthians 9:11 says we are, quote, enriched in every way in order to be generous in every way. Let me say that again. We are enriched in every way in order to be generous in every way. So God gives us portions of his money so that we will be generous with others, to others with it. And the result of our generosity, the verse continues, is that, quote, through us will produce thanksgiving to God. So when we are generous, particularly when we are generous through a solid local church, the result of that generosity is worship. Worship is produced in others when you and I are generous. So if you're sitting there going, look, Pastor, I would love to be more generous, but I just can't. Like, I'm living on the edge. I'm living on, like that's too hard for me. I'm going to try to help with that really quickly. Let's start with your next check. Give first. Start with 10% if you can. If you can't, 5%, 1%. Just do something. Next, whatever amount you give, put that same amount in savings. Then with the leftover, separate your expenses into needs and wants. So needs are like food, shelter, transportation, utilities, insurance, all that stuff. Wants is everything else. And then take a look at the wants list and say, can I do without some of this in order to be generous with the money that God has given me? And maybe you can't. But I'm sure that most of us can do that. And then what you do is you find people, you find organizations, whatever, where you're like, I love them. I want to be generous with them. Now, let me ask you, as you think about this, why do you think there's so much? I mean, there's like half a dozen verses right there on this. Why do you think stinginess is condemned in the Bible? And why do you think there's so much encouragement in the Bible to be generous? I think it's because God sees himself in our generosity. And that pleases him. If you think about it, no one is more generous than who? So when we act in ways that are the opposite of God, it's clear that that's not a good thing. But when we act in ways that match him, that is a good thing. So he gives us life and breath and everything else. He is constantly giving. So it makes sense that it pleases him when we're generous, because it proves that his generosity is what? His generosity is changing our lives when we're generous. In other words, it makes us more like him, the generous one, when we're generous. And that's a really good thing. And it makes sense why God says, 2 Corinthians 8:7, as it relates to being generous, that we should, quote, excel in this act of grace. Excel, move forward in being generous. And since it's safe to say that probably all of us are rich compared to all the people in the world and all the people who've ever lived, let's consider 1 Timothy 6:17, which says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty. We saw that in Proverbs, not to be prideful, nor to set their hope on the uncertainty of riches. We saw that too, right? But to set their hope on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good and to be rich in good works. Well, how do you do that? Verse continues, to be generous and ready to share. Why? Verse continues, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Translation, when you are generous, you are living for the next life. You're seeing the priorities of heaven are more important than the priorities of earth. And I'm creating a sure foundation for that day when I stand before him and give an account for my stewardship. Now, on that note, I want to do a little family business with all of you. Can I do that? Is that okay? A little family meeting. I call us the Redeemer family, so every once in a blue moon, we need to do a little family business. Now, before I do that, if you're a guest, don't care about your money at all. I care about your soul. As I said earlier, this is the third money message in 9 years. And what I want for you is for you to know Christ if you don't know him. And if you do know him, I want you to love and serve him. I'm saying that, you might be thinking, I know why that preacher's talking about money today. Church is broke. Betcha. Church is broke. No, that's not the case. We're doing fine financially. If you're wondering why we took the financial info off the back of the program, it's not because we're struggling. It's because info like that really belongs to members. And so members will get that information in emails that will go out on a regular basis to them. You might think, well, the church is doing fine financially. It doesn't need my money. However, when you and I think like that, if we think like that, we're thinking about the church as what? As the employees. But is that the church? It's not, right? The church is what? It's us. We're the church. If you'd say this is your church, the church is us. So we are doing fine financially. But what I mean by that is not probably not what you're thinking. For the most part, I'm blown away, floored, and in awe of what God is doing here financially at Redeemer Bible Church. Blows me away. This church helps hundreds of people here in Arizona know, love, and serve Jesus, and literally tens of thousands of people all over the world know, love, and serve Jesus. And that is because of your giving. We have the pastors we have, the staff we have, the ministries and the facilities that we have, all because of you. And for that, I am incredibly grateful. And at the same time, we're doing just fine financially because 75% of our members gave last year. It means 25% of our members did not give a dime last year. Now, I don't know names and I don't know amounts, and I know that 25% could be because of hard times, and I get that, and the church is here to help you if that's you. We even have certified financial coaches, like half a dozen of them, who go to church here who can also help you if that's you. But part of the membership covenant is that as members, you, me, we give here primarily. And of the people who attend Redeemer who aren't members, only about 30% gave last year. And again, I can't thank you enough for that. And I can't wait to talk to you about membership. People's lives were impacted for eternity because you gave here. But that also means 70% of non-members are enjoying all the benefits of Redeemer and do not help make Redeemer what it is. So if you're wondering how we're doing financially, having no debt on our property, we're doing fine. I think we're doing just fine and not great because I think we might have a lot of heart issues when it comes to God's money. I have no idea what those are, but I trust that God's been working on those heart issues today as we've looked at 45 verses in the Bible about money. I know that's been the impact of studying this for me this week. You don't think that I just study this stuff and just it doesn't do anything to me because I'm perfect and so I just give that all to you, right? No, this attacks me all week. You get it for like a half an hour. I get it all week. You take all that. And so I hope that in the midst of all this, you already know how God wants you to respond. The issue is just the courage to do it. In summary, the God-pleasing money manager who is aware of money's dangers is going to do two things with the money that God has entrusted to their care. We will honor God with his money, and we will love others with his money. And since it is his money, we will do all of that so that we hear well done when he assesses how we used his money. The fool doesn't think about that at all. The fool lives for self with God's money, uses people, and even uses God to get more money. Which takes us all the way back to the idea that money is never the issue. It's never the issue. The issue is always our hearts. And money is the X-ray. Is it our money or is it God's? Does money have our hearts or does God have our hearts? And as we live our lives, is God my God or is money my God? See, the Bible always starts with our hearts and then everything else flows from there, including the management of the money that God has entrusted to us. So again, at this point, and everything that we've heard and everything that God is doing inside of our hearts right now, will we resist God's ways and continue in anxiety and anger and stress and fear over money? Or will we follow the Lord into the freedom and contentment and joy that he has for us in what he says in his word? At the end of it all, you and I will be incredibly grateful if we commit ourselves to be God-pleasing stewards of God's money. Let's pray. Jesus, 2 Corinthians 8:9 says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty we might become rich." Jesus, you left heaven. You left the riches of heaven. You became a human being. You came here. You died a death on the cross in utter poverty, so that we, through your death, might become eternally rich. And so I pray that for every single person listening to me, that they won't, that the money issue won't be the major thing that they hear today. And what they hear today is that you are God. And that Jesus, when you humbled yourself and became a human being and died on the cross for human sin, that it is from that fact, from that reality in our lives, that we say, like we sang earlier, lover of my soul, the one who died for my sins, I want to live for you. And we can say that in general, but we say that today when it comes to our money, which really isn't our money, it's yours. Give us the grace to respond to the truths of the gospel, the truths of what you've done. Give us the grace to live our lives in ways that are pleasing to you when it comes to our money. Pray this in your name. Amen. Hey, thanks for tuning in to our Redeemer YouTube channel. If this is helpful for you, please make sure that you like this video, smash the subscribe button, and hit that bell icon. It will help us reach more people with biblical truth. Thank you so much.